State judicial elections have been transformed over the last decade. With a few exceptions, they were once relatively low-interest, low-key affairs. But now these races, particularly for state Supreme Court justices, have been flooded with money, often from outside groups with the goal, some charge, of trying to influence judicial decisions. On today's Backstory segment, we'll trace the history of judicial elections and what the political landscape looks like today with Adam Skaggs, counsel with the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. The center has just released a report called The New Politics of Judicial Elections, Decade of Change, and you'll find a link to it on our website. Adam, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
And before we get into this, the Brennan Center for Justice has also been involved in the concern over this new sample ballot. What's the latest on that?
Well, the latest is, as listeners may have heard, we alerted the elections authorities in the city to these concerns that the instructions for the ballot were misleading. Some of my colleagues have been in touch with the mayor's office and are working with officials to try and ensure that this is changed so that voters aren't misled or confused.
And there won't be any hanging chads.
Well, that is certainly our hope.
Can you give us an idea of just how much money has been spent on judicial elections over the last decade?
Sure. As you said in the introduction, what we've seen over the past 10 years is really an explosion in spending in judicial races. So over the last 10 years, from 2000 to 2009, high court candidates running for state Supreme Courts raised about $207 million. And that's more than double the $83 million that these candidates raised in the 90s. So there's really been a tremendous increase.
And do we have any idea of how much has been spent during these elections, these current elections?
Well, we don't have any comprehensive figures yet. We have been tracking spending on TV advertising. We've seen candidates already spend over $4 million on TV ads this year. For the decade, there was about $93 million spent on television. So that's a huge increase from what we've seen in the past. And spending is high this year. There aren't quite as many races this year as in the past election cycle, so it may not be as high. But certainly television advertising continues, negative, harsh, mudslinging attack ads continue, and money keeps pouring into judicial races.
We'll play clips from a few of them during the segment. Not every state has elections, and even then, the elections are different in many different states, aren't they?
That's exactly right. Altogether, 39 states elect some judges.
So that's most of the states.
That's most of the states. A significant proportion of judges across the country are elected. Other states appoint their judges, and some states have hybrid systems where when there's a vacancy on the bench, a judge is appointed. But then to get a second term or a third term, the judges sit for a one candidate, an election that's called a retention election, where just that one candidate is on the ballot and voters vote yes or no.
And then even in the other kinds of elections, some of them are partisan and some are at least in theory nonpartisan?
Well, that's exactly right. There are more states that have nonpartisan contested elections than have partisan elections. But even so, even in states that are nominally nonpartisan, in some cases the political parties are involved in the primary contest and selecting the judge candidates on the ballot. And in other states, even when the parties aren't officially involved, it's pretty clear to voters and to the interest groups that are pouring money into these races which candidates are generally aligned on the left side or the right side.
Does one kind of election usually result in more money being spent?
Well, towards the beginning of the decade, what we saw is that the partisan contests were really the most expensive. The most egregious examples of spending were in partisan races.
And would they be on the Democratic line or the Republican line?
And that's exactly right. A candidate for the judge would be identified as Democrat or Republican, and the same groups that funnel money to those candidates of those parties in other political races often support judicial candidates. Towards the end of the decade, what we saw was that even the nonpartisan races were becoming just as expensive in a number of states. So towards the end of the decade, it was hard to distinguish in many cases even the nonpartisan races.
The Brennan Center's report on this issue calls the amount of money currently being spent on court races a, quote, financial arms race. Is that between Democrats and Republicans, between people who are perceived as conservative or liberal?
In many cases, it is. What we have seen in high court contests is that the so-called tort wars, so trial lawyers on the one hand and industry business groups on the other, have squared off and have funneled money to candidates on either side. what you saw that I think drove a lot of this trend is that in many states where courts were perceived as too friendly to trial lawyers, the business groups got involved and started funneling money to try and change the composition of those high courts.
So really, the trial lawyers had generally been aligned with the Democrats and the business groups with the Republicans.
That's right. So on the left side, if you will, you have the trial lawyer groups as well as some union groups funneling money in. On the other side, you have industry groups, groups like the Chamber of Commerce, National Association of Manufacturers, funneling money to what they perceive to be reliable, often Republican justices.
But we would assume that judges approach every case with an open mind.
Well, of course, that's the ideal, and that's what judges are required to do in their constitutional role. Judges are supposed to decide every case based on the law and the facts of that particular case, not based on who has political connections or who can write the biggest campaign checks. And I think when members of the public start to see judges campaigning, raising funds, just like any other politician, they start to wonder, are these judges really any different? Are these just politicians in robes?
So is the money for these elections usually raised by the judicial candidates themselves, or do most of the donations go to political action committees?
Well, it varies. Often the candidates will set up particular campaign committees that will raise significant amounts of money. But one of the things that is most significant in our report, one of the conclusions, is that a huge amount of the money doesn't go to the candidates themselves. It is spent by outside groups, third-party groups, often the political parties.
But we're seeing that in general during this election cycle.
Well, that's exactly right. The trends that we're seeing with these groups that don't disclose their donors that are spending such huge amounts of money in the congressional races this year were already operating in judicial races over the last 10 years.
Would a judge have to recuse himself in cases where he received campaign donations from a plaintiff or a defendant?
Well, I think in many cases they should. In the vast majority of states and under federal law, a judge is required to recuse him or herself. That is, the judge should be disqualified from a case if there are reasonable questions about whether the judge can be entirely impartial in hearing the case. And if the judge has benefited from tens of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, of campaign support from one of the parties, I think most reasonable observers would have questions about the judge's impartiality. The U.S. Supreme Court, in a case called Caperton v. Massey, last year declared that in extreme examples where the spending on behalf of a judge is really high, the Constitution requires the judge to be disqualified.
We're talking about judicial elections on today's Backstory with Adam Skaggs, a counsel with the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, which has issued a report called The New Politics of Judicial Elections, Decade of Change. And as I said earlier, you can find a link to it on our website at WNYC.org. One state which holds retention elections for Supreme Court justices is Iowa, and three judges there have come under fire from out-of-state conservative groups for their ruling legalizing gay marriage in the state, and we have one of their ads. Let's take a listen.
Some in the ruling class say it's wrong for voters to hold Supreme Court judges accountable for their decisions.
There is no such thing as an activist judge.
When activist judges on Iowa's Supreme Court imposed gay marriage, they were the only judges within 1,200 miles to reach such a radical conclusion. If they can redefine marriage, none of the freedoms we hold dear are safe from judicial activism. To hold activist judges accountable, flip your ballot over and vote no on retention of Supreme Court justices.
I was struck by the opening sentence, the ruling class.
Well, yeah, I think there is, in this race in particular, kind of a populist reaction against what, of course, the opposition is defining as activist judges on the Iowa Supreme Court. And they're really trying to stoke the fires of voter anger, as we see in races across the country this year.
We should point out that the ruling by the Iowa Supreme Court was unanimous, and that ad was paid for by the National Organization for Marriage, which is based in New Jersey. Is this similar to what happened when out-of-state groups ran a campaign to support Prop 8 in California?
Well, I think it has a number of similarities with that. You have the National Organization for Marriage, as you pointed out. You have another group that's based in Mississippi called the American Family Association. And these groups are funneling money, obviously, from out of state into Iowa to attack these judges. What's interesting is the involvement of outside national groups, advocacy groups, in a race in Iowa that historically these retention elections have been very quiet in that state. Again, these are elections in which the candidates are alone on the ballot. There's no opposing candidate, and voters simply vote yes or no whether they should get another term.
But this is a one-issue campaign.
Well, it's really become absolutely that. And the concern about such a one-issue campaign is that if judges are, in effect, put on notice that if they vote a particular way in a politically sensitive or highly charged case, they're going to be looking over their shoulder. Well, what's going to happen to me when I need to try and run for re-election? And we don't want judges worried about political backlash. We want judges answering to the law and the Constitution, not to political pressures.
How often are controversial rulings, especially on social issues like gay marriage, at the center of the debate in these kinds of campaigns?
Well, obviously in Iowa, that's the case. It's social issues.
Are there liberal groups that are trying to counteract that?
Well, there are a variety of nonpartisan groups that have formed in Iowa that have tried to educate voters on what the function of these retention elections is. The judges there have actually chosen not to fight back. They are sort of taking the high road here. And there are other races motivated by social issues. In Kansas, there's a judge who's under fire for rulings in an abortion-related case. She's under attack from social conservatives. But more often than the social issues being the driving force in these Supreme Court elections are economic issues, bread-and-butter economic issues, the kind of tort reform issues that we were talking about earlier. Those are often what motivates the highest levels of spending in these races.
But they would be more likely locally motivated. This sort of thing suggests that we're also seeing a kind of a nationalized campaign funding.
Well, I would suggest that even on those economic issues, national groups are mobilizing and they are nationalizing these races. So earlier in the decade, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, dissatisfied with what it perceived as a hostile litigation environment in a number of states, decided it was going to begin pumping money into Supreme Court races. And there are a number of groups, obviously on both sides of the spectrum, who have spent money based on these tort issues. There's a very expensive race unfolding in Illinois right now, in which an incumbent justice angered members of the business and insurance communities by voting earlier this year to strike down a cap on medical malpractice awards. This judge has now spent more than double any other candidate has spent this year on TV. He spent
this
about
is Thomas Kilbride.
That's right.
We have, in fact, a clip from that campaign.
The cases featured in the following dramatization all come from official records of the state Supreme Court.
I was convicted of sexual assault of three different children.
I was convicted of shooting my ex-girlfriend in the face and murdering her sister while our daughter watched.
I was convicted of sexual assault on a woman and her 10-year-old daughter. Then I slashed their throats and burned them.
On appeal, Justice Thomas Kilbride sided with us over law enforcement or our victims.
Unfortunately for felons like us,
other judges overruled Kilbride, and our conviction stood.
Thomas Kilbride sided with violent felons in these and dozens of other cases that you can find at KilbrideProtectsFelons.org. Kilbride chose criminals' rights in 81% of the court's split decisions, way more than any other justice. Vote no on retention of Supreme Court Judge Thomas Kilbride. It's way down the ballot, but please make it a top priority. Paid for by JustPac.
Now, those voices were obviously actors, and none of the people who they're supposedly portraying said anything like that.
Well, that's right. That ad has been a highly controversial ad. The Illinois Bar Association has condemned it. Certain radio stations have decided not to run it.
Is JustPac an Illinois organization?
JustPac is the political arm of an organization called the Illinois Civil Justice League. Now, what's notable about that advertisement is obviously it focuses on accusing Kilbride of being soft on crime. It's a criminal justice theme to the ad. But the ad is financed by groups that don't work in the criminal justice system at all. They have nothing to do with law enforcement. The groups are business groups. The Illinois Civil Justice League has received significant contributions from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the American Tort Reform Association, and an outfit called the American Justice Partnership. It's a Michigan organization created by the National Manufacturers Association. So these business groups are articulating themes about whether a justice is reliable on criminal justice issues or soft on crime.
Well, you shook your head when that commercial was being run. He didn't do any of those things?
Well, there are a lot of questions about the accuracy of the accusations, but obviously that's a very it's a very controversial and dramatic subject. I think groups are trying to press the hot button issues of the day and get voters motivated by things like the notion that a judge would forgive a rapist or a murderer. They're not talking about whether the judge voted for a cap on medical malpractice damages, which in fact is what the groups care the most about.
Or in some cases, a judge is voting on a legal issue and not even if he thinks that the person is guilty, there are other issues that sometimes come up in cases.
Well, that's exactly right. In many of these cases where it was suggested that Justice Kilbride voted to let rapists go free and that sort of thing, often the votes are unanimous. It's on a narrow legal issue. It's not about the guilt or innocence of the person.
Well, obviously, elections can distort the judicial process, but didn't these elections grow out of reform desires to eliminate the appointment of cronies, of governors and other people in power?
Well, that's exactly right. And in some ways, that's the irony of the fact that these judicial elections have now been dominated by the political parties and by partisan interests and these deep-pocketed special interest groups. When most of the states joined the union, going back to the 19th century now, they had systems like our federal judicial selection system. Of course, in the federal judiciary, the president nominates candidates to be judges and then the Senate confirms them, or at least that's how it's supposed to work. It doesn't always work that way these days. And most states originally had systems like that. During the Jacksonian era in the early 19th century, there was a reaction against these systems based on the perception that governors in smoke-filled back rooms were appointing their cronies. And so they adopted judicial elections in an attempt to give power to individual voters. And of course now the unfortunate development is that the voice of individual voters has really been drowned out by these massive superspending special interest groups.
Just one more thing. In your report, you write that one of the first players to successfully organize serious fundraising in judicial races on a large scale is well-known Karl Rove. He did it originally in Texas?
That's right. Some of the initial campaigning that has now become typical across the country took place in states like Texas. Alabama saw some of this activity early on, going back to the 80s and the 90s. But it really wasn't until this last decade, beginning in the year 2000, that there was this explosion in which races across the country began to be characterized by the kind of electioneering we associate with races for Congress or races for the state house.
I've been talking with Adam Skaggs of the Brennan Center for Justice. They've issued a report called The New Politics of Judicial Elections, 2000 to 2009, Decade of Change. You can find it on our website at wnyc.org. And thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.